I'm Hugo Tagholm. I'm the chief executive of Surface Against Sewage, and I'm at the Extreme Hangout today talking about the ocean and protecting and restoring this blue planet.
I mean, it's this huge resource, so abused, and you see it day in, day out. How big a challenge is it?
Look, it's a colossal challenge. I mean, even sort of that language, you know, it's not just a resource to be tapped into. It needs to be sort of left alone. And I think the language around, you know, the next stage of the economy and how we interact with the ocean is critical to protecting it, because people shouldn't just see this next decade or few decades as a blue gold rush. It's about, you know, restricting what activities can go on, about making sure we truly sustainably manage the ocean, both in terms of what we restore and leave to be wild, but also where we let business happen and the impacts of terrestrial businesses on the ocean, the sewage that's pumped in, you know, not just in the UK, but around the world. The plastic that's going into the ocean, and of course the carbon dioxide, the critical factor that is, you know, changing the chemistry of the ocean and making it very difficult for marine life, corals and other marine life, to actually survive.
I mean, what's your reaction to, I guess, the lack of prominence of oceans in a real sense here at COP26?
Well, look, they are a footnote. The ocean is just a footnote. However, you know, we are optimistic that the language is moving in the right direction. People are starting to recognize this is planet ocean, not planet Earth. The ocean is essential to all of us, not just the surfers, swimmers, coastal communities, but every single human being and every single living entity on this planet. So we're all passengers on this planet, and we really need the ocean to be restored and in full health. And if that means a minimum of 30% highly and fully protected around the world by the end of this decade, that's what we should be aiming for collectively to drive forward.
Yeah, I mean, many people say 30 by 30 is great, but it's not enough.
Yeah, it may not be enough. You know, we need to go further and faster. I mean, if we get there, it will already be a big achievement. So, you know, people can say that, but it's already complicated. So let's set achievable goals. Let's paint a vision for a cleaner, bluer planet by 2030, 2035, that people, you know, can see in the sights of their lifetime. 2050 for a lot of people is far too far away. They just go, well, look, I won't be around. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, it all sounds nice, but we've got to make sure targets are within people's lifetimes to drive change.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's your big message, do you think, for today, for this audience, for COP26?
Look, I would say this is an ocean and climate emergency. It's not just a climate emergency. We've got these unfolding crises, these interlinked crises, plastic pollution, carbon dioxide, the biodiversity crisis, the ocean crisis. All of these are interlinked, and it's driven by the consumption of human beings on this planet, but not just all human beings, a very small minority. 10% of the world's humans are really driving the climate crisis on this planet, and the potential sort of extinction event that we're going through at the moment. Those 10% need to help level down. They need to not consume as much. They need to create an equitable and just transition, and we need to put the ocean at the front and center of that. We can't lift everyone to consuming how the current elite consume. We need to make sure that we have a more moderate and reasonable approach to how we interact with nature.
Jennifer Koskelin, co-founder of the Palau Pledge, and we're here at the Extreme Hangouts.
Well, fascinating session, and what you guys are doing is really inspiring. I mean, how's it going? How's the whole thing working out so far?
I think that the reason it's so inspiring is that once you start a great party, people want to join it. And that is what drives us. That's what inspires us to continue doing this work. If we weren't getting the positive response from community, if we weren't getting the positive response from just this audience and sort of like a lot of head nodding, then we'd say we got to go back to the drawing board and figure out what we need to do. But really, it's just coming from the heart. We're in Palau. It's about community. It's about your neighbors. It's about your contribution to your clan, and those are the most important things to maintain, and your contribution to your family. And in order to do that effectively, the space around you needs to be maintained in a way that you can contribute to your culture, that you can contribute to your family. If I don't have fish to give to my custom, if I don't have taro to give to a customary activity, then I'm not really fully participating in my culture. And that's really what I want to preserve is my culture.
And as part of that, as part of celebrating your culture, but also protecting it. You're encouraging tourists, eco-tourists, to come but leave nothing but footprints.
Yes, and come and experience it, and if there's a message that you can get from it that you can take home, that is the key movement that we hope starts to happen, is that it'll inspire activity at home, that it'll inspire you to do something that you would otherwise not have done.
Coming to an event like this, coming to COP26, to share with so many people, I mean, what impact does that have on you? What will it do for you as you go back?
Well, I've got two little kids who I do this for, Charlie and Ellie, and it's the only way I feel like I can help them, other than making sure they get education, to be able to make the right decisions, to have a place that is safe for them, and that is how I grew up. I want them to experience the world and our island in the same way that I experienced it. And the only way for that to happen is for this work to continue. And it's tough work, it's slogging it, but it needs to happen. And we all have to have the courage to try and do it and get inspired by events like this, to go through those difficult conversations that have to be had around changing our food supplies, around changing our consumer behavior, our habits. Ellie and Charlie are going to be deciding what to purchase down the line, and I want them making decisions based on how it'll impact their space and their place. And I hope that that happens, this message gets out, and people start to think about what they're buying, if they really need that plastic bag when they walk out, and did they really need that extra, you know, piece of makeup or extra, you know, piece of clothing? Do we really need to have a new seasonal fashion every year? You know, those are tough decisions to make in a social media driven space. So I hope that people will take pause, and one little action can have a ripple effect.
And for those who are not familiar, just briefly, how vulnerable is your island to the impacts of climate change?
We're not even in the rounding error space. Palau is 7 degrees north of the equator. We are expected to lose something north of 50% of our fisheries just due to global sea warming. Sea level rise is an issue, and then extreme weather already is an issue. We had a super typhoon this year, and then about 6 or 7 years ago, we had two right in a row. Prior to that, it was every 20 to 30 years, we may get a typhoon, we may get rough winds. So these things are becoming more and more extreme. And as we flew out of Palau to come here, we were having a record time with landslides. So these are happening more and more frequently, and there's only so much we can do to adapt to those occurrences happening.
And we know there's a lag effect. Even taking the action everybody wants to see now, there's some time, there's still going to be increasing impacts of climate change. So this is going to be something you've got to adapt to, as well as campaign for a longer term improvement.
That's right, and that's where One Young World and Extreme are so critical. We need this to be ongoing. The next generation needs to take up the mantle that we're holding right now and take it on, and frankly take it on right now, because the work needs to continue. We can't stop.
And there's a lot of emotion invested in this. We've seen people move to tears on more than one occasion. How do you encourage people to channel their energies, into a positive action?
I think it's really easy sometimes to put our head in the sand and just sort of, you know, get our head under the covers and just hide from it. But you'll find that you have much more a camaraderie when you come together with others and you work as a community to fight some of these challenges in your community, whatever those challenges might be. And that's where you get the hope, that's where you get where I get my belief, is that it's not just me, you're not alone. I'm a team player, it's kind of my MO. I like the fact that we are here in a panel, we're here with a group of people that have different ways of approaching the same exact problem. And it's okay what path you choose, but you have a role to play, and don't ever forget that you have a role to play.
I'm Dan Crockett. I'm a director at Blue Marine Foundation, and I'm at the Extreme Hangout.
Very interesting session this morning. I know you've been doing a lot of interesting work, doing a lot of developments, and you've created new projects in the last week. Maybe first of all, just tell me a bit about that.
So we've had a big week here. We've launched a UK Blue Carbon Forum, which is a group of 40 different research institutions and NGOs, and we'll be working closely with government agencies as well, we hope, to raise ambition for blue carbon and to answer some of the questions that are outstanding around the topic. We've also launched a $15 million science program that's looking to understand the role of the seabed and the seascape in the carbon cycle.
Clearly, the ocean has such a big role. As somebody put it to me, we live on ocean, not earth. So, you know, from your point of view, I know the, you know, your organization's been going for many years, but I guess the challenge now is as great as it's ever been.
Completely. And in some respects, we're moving forward. The public understands the ocean more than it ever has, I think, and understands some of the issues that are facing it. And yet that isn't really translating into policy. We've seen some amazing commitments this week. A group of Central American nations came together and declared a massive 600,000 kilometer squared marine protected area. And that helps us move us towards this 30% by 2030 target. And yet there's still huge amounts that can be done, both in understanding, creating evidence, but also just protecting the things that we need to protect.
And I guess the point is that the ocean can do a great job if we give it the opportunity to.
The ocean as a climate change solution is incredible. I don't know whether you saw the Guardian article yesterday, but they estimate that between 3 and 15% of global emissions could be mitigated through the ocean. Now, at 3%, I'm sometimes told by people, well, that's not very significant. That's massively significant. We're going to need every single tool in the box to get out of this crisis. And I think seeing the ocean being properly recognized within the UNFCCC process is a good start.
So where are your priorities from here on, from COP26 going forward?
We want to keep building the prominence of blue carbon and the way in which these incredible habitats sequester and store carbon. And we want to see that getting more legitimacy. We want to see governments taking it more seriously and companies taking it more seriously.
So I'm Dr. Lauren Beerman from Plymouth Marine Laboratories, and I'm at the Extreme Hangout.
Great. Well, you're very welcome. Fascinating session there. I mean, you specialise in looking at remote sensing from satellites to see what's happening on the Earth. How important is it that you've got that resource to keep a check on the status of the planet?
Oh, it's absolutely essential. And the best thing about the satellite data that I use is it's free. So anything that I'm doing on a local scale, someone else can replicate in their country where they're worried about something and they want to see how it looks. And I feel really empowered by that, because I think it's unethical to use a resource or a sort of a data stream that can't be shared, especially for something as urgent as keeping an eye on the marine environment, looking at marine debris, specifically plastics. So everything that I do is with an eye on sharing, and the satellite data makes that possible anywhere in the world for any person with access to some data, a laptop, and a little bit of the internet.
So what's your eye in the sky telling you? How concerning is it?
I mean, no one wants to hear that the marine plastic pollution issue is now so bad that it can be seen from space. When we talk about seeing things from space, we get excited, right? We're talking about natural wonders of the world. And I don't like the fact that while I was looking for algae and other natural sources of debris, it became clear to me that what I was seeing was unnatural. So, you know, we want to get excited about satellites because we want to show off the good things about our planet. What I'm seeing, unfortunately, is that oftentimes it's not good. Yeah.
And I guess what we're talking about here is not that there's a massive piece of plastic necessarily, but there's a massive amount of microplastic.
Yeah, so I can't see microplastics from space, but I can see the things that one day will eventually become microplastics. And so I'm almost seeing the precursor to an issue that's going to be even harder to deal with in the future. One of the things that is really heartening at the moment is that companies that are collecting commercial satellite data are giving us access to that data at unprecedented resolutions. So we can start to do this work in rivers. and actually clean out the macroplastics, support cleanup operations in rivers before those plastics get to the ocean, before they break down into microplastics. And that's some of the most meaningful work I've done so far, in that it's not just a technically interesting question that I've solved, or, you know, I'm not suggesting different ways of doing something scientifically. I'm actually supporting guys on the ground, removing the plastics before they become an ocean problem.
So you're not just a passive observer and bringer of bad news. You can actually direct action to reduce plastic pollution.
Absolutely. And I think if we take all of those feelings of frustration, and they have, let's be honest, a lot of the work that I do can feel like it grinds me down and makes me really sad. But I turn that into anger, and I turn that anger into action. And I've seen a lot of that today, just at the extreme event. I've seen people who are really passionate and they've turned their anger into action. And they've got these great ideas. And everyone who came up to me afterwards, they weren't just asking me questions. They were telling me what they were doing. And that is magnificent.
Incredible. So where is your work taking you apart from to events like this?
Well, I mean, the best thing about, I would say the silver lining to the last 2 years of being sort of stuck inside of our homes, is that I've virtually connected with organizations all over the world. And we're supporting each other. We're giving our time. I mean, two nights a week, I'm meeting with organizations in America and in Hawaii, and it's, you know, 8 o'clock on my Tuesday and 8 o'clock on my Thursday, but we're giving our time to work on these problems. So if there's a spill event, we all meet and we start to like gather data and resources and skills in order to try and help each other, and wherever that spill has happened, to support on the ground operations. And I don't know if we would have conceived that outside of a lockdown situation. And so I feel like I'm connected to almost every continent on the planet because sort of through these virtual connections. And yeah, and the work I'm most excited about is now this river work, and because I don't want to see plastics in the ocean anymore. I'd like to make myself obsolete and not have a job on that anymore. And I think one of the best ways to do that is to continue to collaborate, to support other organizations, and to do this work in rivers as well.
Hi, I'm Madeline St. Clair, and I'm a tropical marine biologist, conservation filmmaker, and wildlife photographer.
Hi, my name is Francesca Trotman. I'm the founder and managing director of a marine conservation organization based in Mozambique called Love the Oceans.
Great. Well, welcome to the Extreme Hangout. Fascinating session there. I got a feeling whether we've got a bit of like evidence and response here in terms of the way your sort of roles work. I mean, there's so much to talk about. We can't recreate the session, but for you, what are the headlines? You know, what are the things that are really worrying you about what you're seeing?
So, as I said in my presentation, my last few years in the natural world, I've seen ecosystems in transition, where they are going from what they were when they were kind of naturally untouched by the speed at which we are changing the climate to, you know, what they are progressing to now. And I guess the headlines are, will these ecosystems adapt fast enough and be able to continue? Are these processes natural because our climate is naturally changing? Or, you know, is there hope for the future? That's the headlines of mine, really.
and in terms of response, you know, how are people responding to this? How are you helping to galvanize that response?
I think that my area of expertise is quite different to Mads, and my like experience largely lies within NGO work and largely within Africa. My concern is around the approach that people are using to tackle these issues and how holistic it is. I think there are so many social issues attached to each of these scientific issues that we have, and I think potentially the wrong people are being consulted on what the solution is. I think, like, obviously scientists, I'm not talking about scientists here, the scientists have the answers, well, have the questions, but in terms of reaching the solutions and long term, we need local communities, the people who are on the forefront, especially when we're talking about climate change, because you largely have the developed world is responsible for by and large the huge part of climate of carbon emissions, and then you have the people on the front lines who are actually facing those consequences on a day-to-day life are completely different people. They are in a different country, usually in a different hemisphere as well, and so it's really concerning that often those communities are not consulted in the solutions that need to be reached to tackle these issues. So it would be good to see more voices from the Global South being involved in these conversations.
And for you, I mean, two major pinch points, the polls and what we're seeing on the coral reefs. And I guess the important thing is for you then to communicate that back, to communicate what you're seeing.
Yes, and I guess that's why I transitioned from scientist into filmmaker and advocate and photographer, because really it got to the point where I was seeing these things in nature. And, you know, I've always said, you know, the one thing I wish they told me about being a marine biologist is that you'll have the best job in the world and you will see the most beautiful things that no one ever gets to see, but then you'll get to watch them all die. And for the first few years of my career, I'd come back and I'd tell family and friends and say, this is going on and this is happening, and things that became very normal for me, they said, gosh, we had no idea. And the truth is, as I said in the presentation, it doesn't really affect most people's lives. And so this is the power of things like visual media. I mean, the effect that Blue Planet 2 had on people's plastic consumption, the Attenborough effect, that was really, really critical. And my personal belief going forwards, as much as I love these long form, amazing blue chip documentaries that we see that come out of the BBC and much of the natural history production in England, what I would really like to see going forwards is how we can transition this into things that will reach younger generations, like TikTok. That's a big passion of mine, and going forwards, I want to be able to leverage social media and short form content to get into the inner fabric of people's daily lives and to bring what I've seen out there onto people's social media screens so that they can connect with it in ways that they wouldn't every single day.
And isn't the whole point of this is not only informing, but I guess helping in a response? Because a lot of eco-anxiety is about, how do I respond to this? Am I overwhelmed by it, or am I, you know, empowered by it? You know, so I guess the two potential courses of action are, what can I do to make people change or make the policymakers hear me? Or what can I do in my everyday life? I don't know. How do you see?
I think the obviously first and foremost, you've got to look after yourself. So make sure that you're not getting too overwhelmed by everything. It can be incredible, especially at the moment with everything online around COP26. It's important that you're not completely mentally overwhelmed and exhausted by it. I know that a lot of science communicators in this space at the moment are really, really struggling, because it's a lot to deal with, and literally facing the end of the world in a 2-week period, being bombarded with it constantly is quite emotionally exhausting. But I would say that in terms of getting involved and doing, like, quote unquote, your part, I think, as Mads actually said on stage, there's too much kind of spotlight on consumers, on your everyday life. And yes, okay, we do need to turn the lights off when you walk out the room and things like that. But realistically, it's much bigger, larger corporations that are responsible for the large part of global emissions. And so there needs to be more collective action and pressure on these organizations and laws put in place to limit emissions, and accountability and financial investment in that. That's kind of the bigger picture, rather than, yes, I mean, avoid having a plastic bag when you shop for your shopping and turn the lights off and all of that kind of stuff. But you also need to be looking at the much larger picture and the bigger global emitters.
I mean, there's a lot of energy in this room. This whole place, the Extreme Hangout, has been a bundle of energy over the last week and will be next week. And some people have drawn a contrast between that and the sterility inside the blue zone. I wonder whether we need to drag a few people here to see the real mood and the positivity of that mood, to want to be part of the solution.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the bottom line, isn't it? I mean, we have people that don't spend time in the natural world, that don't listen to young voices, that don't listen to diverse voices often, and aren't representative of most of us, who are calling the shots. So that is really difficult, and that's what I would like to see. You know, personally, I would love to run an expedition and take the world leaders out and say, look, this is what's happening. This is an ecosystem that is dying. This is what's going on. This is the result of you directly funding big oil and gas. This is what's happening. And it's one of those things, isn't it, where I would like to see this energy going on in the main events, but how do we get it there?
And we just can't have this, I guess, endless round of discussions, dare I say, the blah, blah, blah. But where do you see it going from here? Is there going to be a real gear change? Is there going to be real urgency? Is there going to be real outcomes going forward from COP26, do you feel?
I mean, there's hope. And I don't know how much more I can say. based on previous experience of this kind of thing, there often isn't accountability or any kind of action from government. As a scientist, it can be super depressing, like knowing the numbers and the trajectory of the environment, but you hang on to hope, and that's, I think, what we all have to hang on to. And in terms of like action and what I was talking about earlier with pressure on larger corporations in your day-to-day life, that can look like petitions and getting involved in campaigns. And campaign work is so important in putting public pressure on these organizations, because realistically, largely they just care about their PR and how they look. So if there's some kind of damage done to that, that's when they'll take action, because that damage equals financial penalties. And there needs to be financial penalties for these organizations that are wrecking the planet, and then and governments wrecking the planet, and then blaming the little people for not changing their day-to-day habits.
And that's something you emphasise on the stage, isn't it? Stop blaming the consumer.
Yeah.
They've got to have something to consume, so don't put it on the plate.
And do you know what? I get asked this all the time, every day, a lot on my social media, is what can I do to create change? What can I do? And I say the biggest thing you can do is use your voice to speak out against this climate injustice, which is what it is. Because, yes, you know what? I'm mostly plant-based. I don't tell a lot of people this because there's a lot of pressure on me to be this perfect specimen that doesn't use plastic and doesn't eat, you know, and it's so many different things, and I feel a huge amount of pressure, and I spent a long time blaming myself. And then you look at the numbers and you look at where this responsibility actually is shouldered, and it is not by us, the consumers. And a lot of us in recent years have made a lot of changes in our lives, but we also have to remember that it is expensive to be sustainable. You know, you got to be a rich man in a lot of cases to buy the £60 sustainable clothes, to, you know, shop in Waitrose and buy organic produce and buy this expensive fancy vegan swaps for everything. It's not something for everyone, you know, and I think we need to be more respectful of the fact that the consumers shouldn't be shouldering all of this responsibility. It's got to be top down.
And for you, what's next in your expeditions? Where's the next climatic danger zone you're going to be looking at?
Oh gosh, so I'm not sure yet. There are a couple of things coming up. Potentially, yeah, so I'm potentially going to Greenland next year again to continue filming about that. We'll see if that comes through. I'm also heading out to Mozambique with Chess, who's with me here, to go and like help out with the sustainable fishing project. And we'll be taking a bunch of young women out there as well to come and see this ecosystem and to really show people and get them involved on the ground of what's going on out there.
Yeah, so you were talking about, you know, your interest in sustainable fisheries and that sort of thing. So Mozambique, that sounds a really interesting project.
Yeah, so we'll be continuing in the next few years. We have a 10-year strategy, conservation strategy, but in the next couple of years, that'll be largely focused around our sustainable fishing project, which we're in stage two of, and it's a 6-stage project spaced over quite a few years. So that will be continuing. We've got our women's health project and our ongoing research areas in coral reefs and megafauna, as well as our tourist trips to supplement income and get more people on the front lines and seeing what's happening to the environment in real time.
Great. Well, I shall wish you both bon voyage in your literal and life journeys.
Yeah, I want to say thank you so much to both Blue Marine Foundation, One Young World and Extreme for having us today, because it's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I second that. Thank you so much for having us.
And I third that. Okay, thank you very much indeed. Great, guys. Thank you so much.